Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this session on environmental exposures and biological variability, defining the exposome in public health research. This session will explore the exposome, the interplay between environmental exposures, biological variability, and public health, understanding how exposures from our environment, diet, and lifestyle interact with our own unique characteristics, such as genetics and physiology, is an important area of study for environmental public health. So we have four exciting talks in this session. The session is sponsored by APHA's environment section. And I just wanted to remind everyone that the environment section is having our social event tonight at 6:30, just down the hall in rooms 2009 and 2011, I believe. So with that, I will introduce our first speaker, Dr. Nina Holland. Dr. Holland is a principal investigator on multiple federally funded grants. She is also the director of the Children's Environmental Health Laboratory and School of Public Health Biorepository at the University of California, Berkeley. And her research involves the role of genetics and epigenetics in susceptibility to environmental exposures. And Dr. Holland will talk with us about environmental exposures during pregnancy in Mexican-American women and their effects on epigenetics in newborns.
Good afternoon. It's nice to be here. I would like to talk about multiple exposures that are so common in many of our cohorts. An example that will be given today, in fact, in two talks that are scheduled for this session, will be from the cohort of Mexican-American mothers and children. I will be focusing mostly on epigenetics. But before I talk about epigenetics and what it's important, I would like to say disclosure. There is no conflict. It's important now, required. So I would like to describe this pretty amazing cohort that was followed since 1998. And Professor Brand Ashkenazi, my dear friend and colleague, coincidentally, is talking in another sessions right now on a different project related to exposure to dioxin in Italy. So it falls to me to talk a little bit about Chamacus here. And Chamacus is one of the eight first centers of children's environmental health that were funded in 1998 by joint effort of NHS and EPA. And our center is one of four who are still in the running almost 14 years later. So it was 600 women enrolled when they were in the early stages of pregnancy, as early as 13 weeks of pregnancy. And now they have been followed through the time of pregnancy and children is 12 years of age as we speak. And what is another wonderful accomplishment of this study is that it's generated tremendous amount of different biological and environmental samples collected at the multiple time points. And you can see from first trimester through 12 years of age, we have multiple samples of maternal urine and blood, child urine, cord blood, and child blood. And when we are talking about blood, I would like to emphasize that we really put a lot of time and energy into processing these samples in the most sophisticated way that now allow us through these multiple aliquots of cryopreserved lymphocytes and the stabilized RNA and clots and you name it, and we probably have it. So it allows conducting multiple types of study, including those that I will be describing today. Because the value of this longitudinal study, when we can go back 12 years and look at the effects of these exposures that happened during pregnancy on the development and health of children at different stages of their lives through their adolescence, is extremely valuable. And this is a spectrum of exposures. In the title of this symposium, we have the word exposome. And I just want to disclose the exposome is actually a new concept that was introduced in 2005 by Dr. Chris Wild. He is now, actually, in 2009, became director of National Cancer Agency, but he published this opinion paper in 2005. In 2010, it was a paper in Science published by Professor Steve Rappaport and Martin Smith from our School of Public Health at UC Berkeley that advanced the concept of exposome even further as a very comprehensive assessment, both longitudinal and across multiple types of exposures that are not limited only to environmental chemicals, but include diet and any other exposures that one can think of. We are well behind in terms of understanding exposome if we compare on how much we actually know, for example, about genetic markers and genome. So we have a lot of work to do. But in Chamaka's study, a lot of chemicals already have been analyzed. In collaboration with CDC and several other colleagues, but mostly CDC. Another interesting feature that it goes back to the time of pregnancy, but some of the type of exposure, such as BPA, for example, and organophosphate pesticide, analyzed at several time points. It gives us, you know, quite a power to look at the effects of these exposures on multiple health outcomes that range from time of pregnancy, neurodevelopment, birth outcome. Now we are very much interested in obesity because in this cohort we have unusually high level prevalence of obesity in our 9-year-old children. More than 50% of them are overweight or obese. It is higher, quite a bit higher than in other Mexican-American populations in our country, never mind other ethnicities that are also affected by this obesity epidemics, but this one is definitely at high risk. So today I will be talking about DNA methylation as one of the parameters of epigenetic changes. But before I do, again, I want to point to two types of exposures that I mostly will be describing effects of on epigenetic markers, and those are persistent organic pollutants. They are organochlorines and PVDEs. In both cases, you see on the left a distribution of measurements that were done in the serum of mothers during pregnancy. And you can see that there is a really broad range of levels that we found in these pregnant women for both types of exposures. But what is important to appreciate that when we compare with other Mexican-American populations by N. Haynes study, by CDC, and this would be dark purple is N. Haynes. I apologize, we don't have pointers here, but light purple on the right in each plate is Chamaka's study. So it's very easy to see that on average, Chamaka's women had much higher level of DDT and its metabolites than other Mexican-American women across the country. It does it on its own. I guess waving helps. So what it happens as a result of these exposures is also characterized by the colleagues and it's published beginning from 2006, and more papers are coming as we speak. So it was associated with neurodevelopmental delays during early childhood, and breastfeeding was actually beneficial among these women, even they had high level of exposure. Decreased level of gestation also associated with this type of exposure. These women, many of them were born in Mexico. This is why in Mexico, DDT were recently used in comparison to the United States when it was banned quite a long time ago. So with them, they brought here, when they come to work in our Salinas fields, our agricultural workers, they brought these relatively high levels of organochlorines. PBDEs, now it's another story. It's because they are living in California. They have unusually high levels of PBDE. Well, flame retardants, you probably heard about it in the media and in some other presentation. I want to point out to the very right, this is California. And California has a very questionable honor of being the highest in the world in terms of level of PBDE because of our very stringent requirements for flame retardants. So now it's being revoked, and hopefully in the next 30-35 years we will get a little bit lower. But in the meantime, we have to face, so this Germany on the very left, and this is California on the very right. I don't need to tell more because the picture speaks stronger. But this is what PBDEs are associated with, and it's shown in our population. Actually, PBDE in Salinas, it's where our Chamacas children live, in Salinas Valley, are the highest ever reported. Those children who are living now, children of these Mexican-American workers, have high PBDE levels because they live in California. And it's associated with lower birth weight, poor attention at school age, lower verbal IQ. So this is exposures. We have multiple exposures. Now we want to understand how we can figure out what these exposures will affect functioning of genome of these children. Because genome is something that is present and is not usually changed during the lifetime. When you measure polymorphisms in every cell of the body, in every age of the human, it will be the same. Epigenetics is different. In the last 5-10 years, this is really rapidly exploding area of research because there is understanding that there is no change in DNA, but environmental exposure and other parameters can dramatically change expression of our program that is recorded in our DNA. So epigenetics actually stands to changes above or over, so it's a changes in phenotype or gene expression without changes in DNA sequence. So it's a new frontier, and I will be able to share only a few news from this front line. So epigenetic changes, there are several types. There is microRNAs or non-coding RNAs, there is chromatin modification, but probably the most well developed and established so far is DNA methylation. And it does play a significant role in mediation of the effects of environmental exposures on children's health. And unlike genetics, it could be reversible. This is another reason we are so excited about potential for epigenetics, because if we figure out what's happening, how it goes bad, and whether there are some means we can turn it around or either prevent these adverse changes and associated health outcomes, or we can improve the condition of epigenome. So this may be a plausible mechanism explaining fetal origin of human disease, so-called Barker hypothesis. I'm sure many of you heard about it. It just essentially tells us that things that affected development of fetus or embryo during the pregnancy on the very early stages of life may affect not only the health of children when they are born children, but may affect the health of these individuals when they become adults throughout all their life, affect their cardiovascular health, affect their obesity, affect diabetes risk. Many other parameters can be affected. And plus, we already know that fetal period, this embryonic period, is particularly susceptible to many exposures that we know are happening to these children. That was demonstrated, and I just gave you a few examples based on our cohort. So DNA methylation. Right now, just to give you a zest of it, what DNA methylation is. We are talking about attachment of methyl groups to certain bases in the sequence. And what it does when sequence that is having high level of methylation, it will be not expressed as actively because it's inhibited expression. So let's say we have a promoter region of the gene and it's highly methylated. It means that this gene will not be expressed as actively as it could be. So it may be good. So let's say we are talking about oncogene. We want it to be suppressed. But if we are talking about suppressors, then we don't really want it to happen, because if it's unmethylated, then we will have all these oncogenes charging along. So in many other cases, it's actually beneficial when it's an enzyme that, for example, protect from exposure to some environmental pollutants. We will have a talk later in this session that will be describing an example of pyroxanase, that it's exactly the type of enzymes that you want to be well expressed. So how to analyze? It's a very complicated technically area of research, and there are multitude of methodologies that can be used. You can look at global methylation using pyrosequencing of these repeats that are spread all over our genome, so-called transposons. There is genome-wide and site-specific array type of analysis, and I will tell a little more in a few minutes, but it's essentially looking at almost 500,000 methylation sites in majority of genome. And there are some other next-generation sequencing that is just happening in the last couple of years, 2-3 years. Some of them are still quite expensive, very labor-intensive in terms of analysis, because this type of sample assays generate piles of data, huge piles of data. So bioinformatics is a big challenge in this line of research. But first I want to describe pyrosequencing of line 1 and ALU. Line 1 stands for long interspersed nuclear element. So it's just chunk of DNA, approximately 6,000 base pairs, and we have 500,000 of them through the genome. We are not quite sure about their function, but transposons, when they are superactivated, when they are released, what they can do, they can kind of create instability, genetic instability. And there are some associations that we do not want them to be kind of jumping around. So for us to use align one and ALU, it's a biomarker, because there is so many of them, and we can measure them in relatively simple methodology in comparison to the one I will just describe in a minute. We can give at least like a assessment, okay, how high in comparison to other people in the same population this individual has the level of methylation. And we can establish, and it has been done for quite a few chemicals, that there is a very important and meaningful biological association with this particular biomarker. I promise that 450K methylation is a little more complicated, and it is. So we are talking about more than 20,000 genes that are represented in this array, almost 500,000 CpG sites, and there is a spread through different functional units of the genome, and the promoter and the different gene body, and there are these interesting shores and oceans. There are all kind of interesting terminology that was introduced by people who are developing this line of research. What is really, really critical, as soon as you begin to deal with this kind of data, QAQC, that stands for quality control and quality assurance. And I'm quite big on that, because even now, when as we speak, there are people who published and published and published, and then there are papers that come and say, oops, all these things that you are reporting in the previous generation of Illumina Infinium in 27K, unfortunately, it's all technical errors. It's just in the American Journal of Human Genetics that were just two commentaries, unfortunately, about publication of some other researchers. So we have to be very, very stringent about incorporating and making provision for this very careful evaluation of quality assurance of all the data before we even begin to try to figure out what biologically they mean. So in our study, before we started looking at effect of exposure, we really wanted to understand, okay, what happens with all these multiple markers when children grow older, and we have all this data for multiple time points. Because epigenetics, unlike genetics, we have to measure methylation at birth, at 9 years of age, or any other time, because it will change. We just have to figure out how. Another question that is almost obvious but often overlooked, boys and girls are quite different in terms of epigenetics. We need to figure out how and how to use this in our analysis. And of course, now we are interested in the effect of exposures that happened when their moms are working in the field, often when they have been pregnant. So some results, I want to show just a few results, and this is about this global DNA methylation, line one, data that we have done for our almost 600 mothers. So what we found, so this is not mothers yet, excuse me, this I'm talking about children, and we measured it in cord bloods in the same children at 2 years of age, 5 years of age, and 9 years of age, because we wanted to understand what happens with methylation overall. And what we found that there is a statistically significant, highly so, decrease in global methylation that we found in Chamacas, and we calculated approximately how much happens over the year. Not much, but not little either. 3.6 each year of life. When we looked at the differences by sex, we also observed that boys, when they were newborns, boys on the left, girls on the right, significantly higher in boys. In fact, we expect it the other way around, because females have two X chromosomes and one of them is usually highly methylated. However, we do not see this effect for global methylation. And we have the same effect, but even became more significant at 9 years of age, that boys have a higher level of global methylation than girls. This is effect of exposure, and looking green line at girls and red line is boys. So they are literally parallel. Girls are a little bit lower, boys are higher, like we just showed in the previous slide. And we're looking at the effect of exposure to DDT metabolite at birth. What we found, it's not statistically significant, but this trend is very kind of telling. There is also somewhat decreasing level of methylation in these transposons. And you may remember what I was telling you. We do not want transposons to get hypermethylated, because then they become more expressed or more active. And transposons in general are linked to instability. So this is what happens with exposure. Now, data on 450K on this Infinium Illumina that describe genome-wide but site-specific methylation. So what all this risk bar show, when we are talking about 254 children and we wanted to compare children at birth and at 9 years of age, each of these risk boxes shows the chips. Because to analyze it, for each individual, you have only 12 positions on the chip. So we have to use 24 different chips. It's expensive, very expensive exercise. And we also have to incorporate various parameters of quality assurance. But one of the things that really was comforting to us, overall, when we spread our samples randomly, we saw that they were quite comparable. So this is another QAQC plot that shows that we have a very, very good reproducibility because between duplicates. And this is the data. In this case, we are looking at the effect of age, difference between newborns. And you see the red line. Red line is adjustments for multiple comparison. Everything that about red line, this is the changes that are statistically meaningful. And also we can analyze across the chromosome. Each of these little dots represent the spots. So we are exploring among these multiple sites, more than 75 sites. There is abundance of sites that are different by age, some of them higher, some of them lower. This is sex, effect of sex. Again, red line, everything above is significant. 23rd, it's the X chromosome, to be expected. but the rest of it, autosomes. But they also have some of the sites that are meaningfully different between boys and girls. We are trying to now analyze what's going on. So 700, a little more than 700 of these sites are different between boys and girls, not in the sites, not in the sex chromosome. And this beauty represents overlap of these differences. This is Venn diagram, and I know it's a little bit complicated, but what we are trying to illustrate that there is a very significant overlap between differences by age, difference by sex, and when we are comparing different portions of this Venn diagram, this is our map of what we are going to explore next, because it shows we have multiple targets that are significantly different, and this is now we can narrow our research on these particular genes that demonstrate a significant difference by age and sex. The same applies to exposure. Of course, we are interested, and we found this is examples of genes that more than 100 actually CpG sites with multiple genes that have been differentially methylated by OC exposure for mothers during pregnancy, and there is enrichments in several pathways, including spliceosome, tumor suppression, neurotropin signaling. So the same applies to PBDE. So conclusions. There is a wide distribution of organochlorine and PBDE serum concentration in Chamakos mothers during pregnancy that may affect the health of their children. And global DNA methylation as an example of epigenetic markers, global methylation measured by line 1, was decreased in American children, Mexican-American children from birth to 9 years of age, possibly due to exposure, but we have to explore it. And boys had consistently higher level of methylation than girls. Again, we don't quite understand why, but this is a continuing research. So looking at the site-specific changes and pathways, we found that there are multiple candidates, genes and pathways that differ by both sex and age. And our preliminary data indicate that prenatal exposure are associated with altered methylation in newborn and in older children. So where to go from here? There are these really numerous, very interesting methodologies that we are trying to apply. For example, we want to validate our data using targeted bisulfite sequencing, because it will give us even more precise coverage for the same interesting genes and pathways that we identify using our array approach. Then we will do RNA sequencing to see what indeed happens with expression. As we expect, epigenetics should affect expression. Now we want to prove it using array approach, microarrays, or RNA sequencing. And we are interested in effect with health outcomes. So right now I would love to really acknowledge my collaborators, and I already mentioned Brenda Ashkenazi and colleagues from Chamakos office, and also from my lab, Karen Huyen and Dr. Lisa Barcelos. She's in our School of Public Health. She's an expert also on epigenetics. Some of our students and colleagues from CDC who were involved in analysis of PBDs and OCs. And of course, our field personnel and salesians and our participants. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We probably have time just for one quick question.
So I was wondering, what tissue did you take the DNA samples from?
Well,
blood.
I exactly understand what you're asking. Yes, it was blood. So what we were doing, we were collecting blood, and from cord blood and from peripheral blood, when we separated, when you separate serum, you have clot. And clot, in many studies, people kind of discarded it because they didn't know what to do. But clot captures all white blood cells that are found in this individual. People sometimes say, well, is blood the target tissue? Is it the best tissue to analyze? because let's say you're looking at the changes that are associated with the brain development. So there is a big kind of discussion going on in the field of epigenetics, and I was just at the brainstorming sessions that NIH organized about these surrogate tissues. So in many cases, blood can produce very informative and very relevant results. There is some complications in terms of analysis, such as different cell counts that we can analyze and take into account. People say, oh, you cannot say anything now. We know that you can, because differences turned out to be not so tremendous by differential cell count, if you can adjust for it, that we do. And also, some investigators were able to compare methylation profile in, let's say, in brain and in blood. And in many cases, some differences were interesting, but there were some similarities that were also very informative. So for population study, blood often is the only tissue, probably buccal cells, but blood in many cases is really a target tissue. We are very much interested in obesity, and it's probably very, very appropriate to study blood. Immunological parameters, again, blood is good. But people have to think very carefully about their potential research question to select what would be their best target tissue to analyze.
Thank you so much.